call the meeting of the House of Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. Members, please take your seats. We do have a quorum is present. Is there a motion to approve the minutes for March 3rd, 2020?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, I think I heard it from Representative Cleavorn first. Well, so.
Happy to defer to okay. Representative.
Okay, Representative Cleavorn approves the minutes for March 30th, 2020. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 3rd, 2020 are approved. We have Representative Tapke here today to talk about the student athletes allowed compensation for use of athlete's name, image, or likeness, and a working group established. So welcome to the committee, Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Well, and so first we have House File 3908, and I will move that the House 3908 be referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Representative Tapke has an author's amendment, and I will move that amendment, DE2 amendment, to put the bill in the form the author wants. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Quam also submitted an amendment, and I just want to pause for a minute. Hold on a second. Okay, we'll just move to Representative Quam's amendment. Representative Quam, please tell us about your amendment, and you may move it if you wish to.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The basic intent is if it's a team sport, the person is there because the team has been part of that success. And my intent is that should be understood and accepted, and that part of the proceeds from that success should be dispersed amongst the team members. And that way, I think it helps team cohesion, and it's just the right thing to do. And then a smaller portion would go towards the scholarship fund in that university, because part of, you know, many of these athletes, they received a scholarship, and this would propagate forward, pay forward to others to be able to succeed and have that wonderful opportunity. And that is the intent of the amendment, and I would move the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Tapke, do you have any comments about the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. When I walk through the bill and talk about what the bill actually does, and as we get into the bill to discuss, I will absolutely address the concerns of Representative Kwan, because I have many of the same as this moves forward. But I ask now that we do not accept this amendment.
Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I don't know enough about the bill, so I'm not ready to. Okay. We've just got the DE2 here, and so I'd rather hear from the author the full explanation about this bill before we would move any additional amendments. So it may come up later. I'm just not ready to vote on an amendment this time.
Representative Quam, did you want to say something? Because I have a recommendation. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm fine with pulling it and moving it if it's more appropriate informationally to address the topic.
Okay. So we'll just, you're going to table it for right now and then bring it back up if you want to. Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Tapke, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So this is a bill. It's often referred to as Fair Pay to Play Act. It was in 2019. It was passed in California in order to get the NCAA to move on working to fairly pay student athletes for their name, image, and likeness. So what that means is if a student athlete would like to at their hometown, if we have an exceptional swimmer, if she would like to go back to her hometown and have swimming lessons in her name in order to get more students to be able to attend her classes and do courses and do things like that, that she will do that. That's currently not available under the NCAA and the current systems that are in place today. There are many stories about how high-profile athletes are featured in video games, and in those video games that, as an amateur athlete, they do not get paid for the university and the systems using their name, image, or likeness in the video games, and so those last on for years and even a decade later, and so these are students who have put in a ton of work, who have gained a lot of notoriety and are working really hard on behalf of the university systems, and then the university is making and the NCAA is making significant amount of money on their using their name, image, and likeness, and that student athlete does not get any compensation for that, does not get any feedback on how that is used. So there are many different ways where this can be utilized and implemented, and it's for creating a fair system for athletes to be able to be paid for their really hard work that they put into it. And so if we refer to the DE2 bill, which is what's in front of everyone today, I'd just like to, Madam Chair, walk through the bill so that everyone can understand what it is. What this bill does is it sets up a framework to push the NCAA to come forward with rules and regulations around paying student athletes. And so there are many, many questions that are out there as to how this can be implemented, how this can move forward, how, as Representative Kwan was discussing, how students within a team will perform and different things like that. But what we're doing is saying that this is something that we believe in, that student athletes, for a wide variety of reasons, should have the ability to be paid for their playing, since there are a lot of money, people making money in on their name, image, and likeness. And so this sets up the framework of what it would look like, just basically saying that students have to have the ability to get paid and have representation, and it cannot conflict with their sports team contracts as well. And so those things are in here, and I'll walk through a little more clearly. But what we're doing is just pushing the NCAA. It has an effective date of January 1 of 2023. And so what this is saying the NCAA has to move forward and act. There are 15 states currently that have passed or are working on this type of bill. And if we in Minnesota don't do something to help to match what other states are doing, we will be at a significant disadvantage of on the side of recruiting. We'll be at a significant disadvantage on the ability to maintain and retain players within the state of Minnesota. And we have to work together to have a system-wide framework. And so the bill, as it goes through the first few subdivisions there, it defines athletics organizations, and just so everyone knows, this is all divisions. This is up and down the scale on line 1.5 that defines athletics organizations, so that's all divisions, so that everyone is treated equally from D3 schools and junior colleges through D1 schools as well. And so then down on line 1.18, subdivision 3, under compensation there, post-secondary educational institution must not uphold any rule, requirement, standard, or other limitation that prevents a student of that institution from participating in intercollegiate athletes from earning compensation as a result of the use of their student's name, image, or likeness. So that's the main crux of it right there, and being able to be paid for those types of things. And then if you go to the next page on subdivision 4, the representation is the ability of that student to maintain representation from as a sports athletic agents and legal representation on that piece. And then subdivision 5 on line 2.24 has team contracts, that nothing that a student athlete does can be in conflict with the team's contract that they have. And then lastly, in 3.4, we head to judiciary from here. Subdivision 6 under enforcement is that if this is violated, there is the student may bring civil action. And so we thought long and hard about that, and there were many, and the California law has the ability to sue the universities for that work. And so we talked about how we want to do that. And so we decided to have it as a civil action to recover damages and receive other equitable relief as determined by the court as to how this gets enforced. And so again, on 3.12 is the effective date of January 1, 2023. This sets up the framework for making sure that the NCAA puts together rules and regulations and draws those lines in the sand as to making sure that the NCAA and a pay in paying student athletes for their work in this fair system, make sure that it is equitable for women's sports and men's sports, that it is equitable for in races and demographics, that we make sure that all those things are happening, and we highly expect, and all indications are from the NCAA, that they will be putting together those frameworks and rules that fall within this bill. And this language is very similar to California's bill, and so we're intentionally doing that to make sure that we are not setting up frameworks that's different from state by state.
Members, are there any questions? Vice Chair Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So California, so it's modeled after California, and it's in place in California, but then you also said that there are, you know, we might be getting behind. Other states are always also moving forward. And do you have information on that right now, states that might be moving forward with similar legislation?
Yeah, there are multiple states who have passed. Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. There are multiple states who have passed, and there are at least 15 more states that are considering legislation today.
Okay, and if I may ask a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Pryor.
Thank you. So wouldn't the NCAA just make a kind of a blanket accommodation? I mean, wouldn't Minnesota just be part of what NCAA is doing nationally? Do we have to pass separate legislation if it seems to be that this is something they're doing already?
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Pryor. Yes, you are absolutely correct that there is the NCAA, not long after the California ruling, the California law was signed by the governor of California, that the NCAA moved forward and unanimously as a body said that they wanted to have some sort of regulatory framework for paying players. It hasn't really, we don't really trust that that's absolutely going to happen. There was a lot of media and a lot of public relations that was happening in that, and I would much rather, I would feel much more comfortable for Minnesota universities and for Minnesota Athletic Association, athletic student athletes to have that, make sure that the state of Minnesota is included in that work. And so that's why we're bringing this forward. And I didn't mention before, but been working very closely with Senator Chamberlain in the Senate on the bill as well.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With California already kind of in the works or moving ahead with it, has there been any, I mean, what's happening in California? Is there anything that is happening, or can you, is anybody affected by it, making money by it? I mean, I think that's important to know. If it's in theory sounds like it's pretty good, but, you know, is it going to be as lucrative as the NBA and these other? I'm just kind of curious. Is there any updates, I guess, of what I'm looking for?
Representative Tabke.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Nornes. So California has an effective date as well of January 1 of 2023. This bill is basically a cattle prod to get the NCAA to move forward and to start looking at paying players for their hard work. And so this, nothing has taken effect yet. None of the bills that have been passed that I'm aware of have actually taken effect. This just says that by January 1 of 2023, you have to have something figured out, and you have to have you have to have rules in place for paying players. That that paying players is fraught with concerns, and it's fraught with things that need to have really smart people thinking about and thinking and figuring out how to make it move forward so that it is as fair and equitable as humanly possible. So as Representative Kwan was saying, that it is concerning if one member of a, we'll say a collegiate football team gets a contract and is making a lot of money, and the linebacker is or the D line is not really benefiting from that at all. And so what I fully expect and anticipate will happen with this is that there is a framework for equitably sharing those contracts and making sure that across the board that it is fair and that it is positive for all players. And that another good example is this past weekend, about a year ago, there was a UCLA gymnast. There's nowhere to go from collegiate gymnasts up. So she is a big proponent of this work, and because she got really one of those overnight viral famous with one of her gymnastics routines that she did, and there was nothing that she could do to capitalize on that financially. There was no way that she was able to sell ads on her Instagram feed or whatever she would like to do in order to monetize that overnight success that she had after putting in decades of work. This past weekend, another UCLA gymnast did a routine to a Beyonce song, and also it was somehow, I don't really follow gymnasts in my social media, but it showed up in my social media feed multiple times because it was just amazing. And so she has no way under NCAA framework today of making any financial gain off of that. And so I think that that would be the fair thing to do if that's what she wants to do.
Okay. Representative Norris, did you have a follow-up?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Rumbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. just wondering how, if anyone's thought about the impact on Olympic qualifiers and people trying to go that next round up. I mean, it seems like it might sort of diminish the interest, but I don't know. Have you thought about that? If they're getting paid now, you know, at the collegiate level, are they really going to seek that additional fame and fortune, whatever?
Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair and Representative Rumbach, that is an excellent question that, yes, we've been definitely thinking about. And if you follow Summer Olympics at all, Katie Ledecky is she's a fantastic swimmer, and she is a huge proponent of this bill because she was in, I believe it was Stanford, where she went to college, and she was unable as a college athlete to financially capitalize on her extraordinary success that she had in the Olympics. And so she quit college in order to make money as a swimmer and to capitalize and get contracts and shoe contracts and clothing contracts and things like that. But she had to quit college in order to do that, and because she wanted to maintain her swimming. So I think that that is a perfect example of how this will be utilized in the future.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still not sure if I would support this or not support this, but I know that as we have people who perform or are participants in college sports, they are student athletes, not athletes who happen to be students. I mean, their primary function should be to earn a collegiate degree. I mean, that's what they're there to do. They happen to have a talent that they are able to engage in while they're a student. But I'm just curious about your thoughts on that and how this transforms a student athlete into being somebody whose emphasis is more on the athletic side rather than the academic side.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Poppy. Yes, I could not agree with you more on that. We want our student athletes to be student athletes, and however many more times than not, what ends up happening with our student athletes is the athletic side of the program ends up becoming more all-encompassing, especially with the larger sports, of what the athletes are working on and what they're doing. And so there are a myriad number of stories where, for example, football players have no chance of making money after their football career is over, but they've also got knees that are blown out and major injuries and concussion problems and things like that. And they are unable to be as financially well off into the future as they could have been by making money as a student athlete as well. And so there are many things, and I think that we need to really, really look at that as to how we make sure that student athletes are students and athletes at the same time and not just on the athletic side of things. But that's another one of those issues that I really believe that the NCAA is working on and is making sure that our student athletes are still students and athletes and not just corporate athletes or anything like that working within the collegiate system. And so there are a lot of lines in the sand that will need to be drawn as to how recruiting, for example, if somebody wanted to, someone in Austin, a student, they were trying to recruit a student to come to a school in Austin, and there's a car dealership that wants to work with the university to get the best possible students. And this car dealership, and part of an advertising scheme, is putting up, you know, a lot of money in order to recruit students to that college. I don't think that anybody wants those kinds of things to happen. I don't think that anybody wants student athletes to be into the realm of overpaid professional athletes or anything like that. We want them to be student athletes. And what we're banking on is the NCAA will put framework around it to make sure that those student athletes who are putting to create a fair framework where those student athletes who are putting their body, their mind, everything on the line for that university. And there are a lot of people making a lot of money off of their name, image, and likeness to let the student participate in that effort.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is call our testifier up, which is Jeremiah Carter, the Director of Athletic Complex at the University of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and your position for the record.
Thanks, Madam Chair. My name is Jeremiah Carter. I'm the Director of Athletic Compliance at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. Our office's role is to make sure that the university is complying with all NCAA, Big Ten, and WCHA rules. I've served in this role for the university for the past 5 years, and I'm a former student athlete in the sport of football, and I was a former coach at the university as well. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and give some perspective on this legislation. Like all of you, our first priority is supporting and protecting our student athletes. This is our student athletes across the university system. There are 675 Division I student athletes at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. We have 400 multi-division student athletes at the University of Minnesota Duluth. And between the University of Minnesota Morris and Crookston, Division II and Division III, there's an additional 600 student athletes. In our role as a founding member of the Big Ten and a good standing member of the NCAA, we welcome and will continue to advocate for student athletes. And it's in that spirit that we welcome these conversations around name, image, and likeness legislation. Name, image, and likeness is a complex issue. Ultimately, it's going to require a national solution, not a state-by-state solution. It'll impact both our high-profile student athletes and student athletes from all three divisions. There are 30 NCAA Division I, II, or III institutions in the state of Minnesota. The NCAA governance structure is moving forward with a set of more permissive rules intended to provide uniform regulation in this area. The purpose of these rules and why there are some restrictions is it's intended to avoid any unintended consequences of this effort, including how to prevent undue third-party influences in the areas of recruiting, the transfer process, or in the educational experience of student athletes. The NCAA has publicly stated that there will be new rules ready for membership vote by January 2021 with the NCAA convention, a little less than a year from now, with interim updates coming in April, June, and October of this year. We're closely monitoring these, and we're actively participating in feedback and helping to craft the best legislation possible that works across the spectrum of Division I. We are optimistic that this new legislation is going to provide clarity and guidance and move forward in the best interests of our student athletes. We do anticipate that the NCAA rule modification will be a positive step towards the goals of this legislation. However, the amended policies may not reach the full requirements laid out in this bill. As a result, we encourage you to consider the impact to the university if the new legislation from the NCAA does not go as far as this bill, and what position that would leave the institution in, because it's unclear what punitive steps, if any, the NCAA would take against the institution for following the requirements of this bill. Again, we support our student athletes. We support this conversation around name, image, and likeness legislation, and I'd welcome any questions you have. Thank you.
Members, are there any questions? Oh, well, I should just ask. Okay, members, do you have any questions? We have Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tabke, it seems like there's so many unknowns right now. From listening to the conversation and having Jeremiah do his introduction here, that we don't know what the parameters are going to be from the NCAA yet. We don't know what the rules are going to be yet. And California's is kind of, sounds like it's still up in the air. And I did a little Google search, and there's positive, there's negative. Would it be wise to maybe wait on this thing until the NCAA has their rules set up, and then we see if we want to follow that? Because I'm just afraid if you get everything out there, we're still going to have to, if it's different than we think it's going to be for the rules, we're going to have to mend everything after the rules are set. And I just think that's, we're maybe just doing this a little prematurely. Maybe we should wait and see what the rules are January 1 next year, so not that far down the road. That's just my comment, my thought. So if you want to respond to that, that'd be great.
Representative Tabke.
Madam Chair and Representative Daniels, yes, I very much understand what you're saying, but that gets at the heart of what we're working on and what we're trying to do. We need to ensure that we don't know what the NCAA rules will come out to be. We assume that the NCAA rules will come out with a nationwide type of solutions for things, but we don't know that for sure as to exactly what's going to happen. So I believe, and Senator Chamberlain believes, that the state of Minnesota needs to have the framework in place for the NCAA to work within that sets out the parameters of, we believe that students should be able to be paid for play, and we expect the NCAA to put that rulemaking together within that framework. And so that's why I think it's important that we have a bill to set up that framework and to move forward with it. But I definitely understand what you're saying, but I don't know for sure that if we were to take that route, the state of Minnesota would have a seat at the table.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking it sounds like there's some more work that needs to be done here, and there's questions, and I think that we should table the bill and allow the author to get some of these questions answered. But I do want to take public testimony before that we do that. Is there anyone in the audience that wanted to testify? Okay. Okay, just want to make sure it was included. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. You know, my thought looking at the bill was if there's a clause that basically said cannot conflict with NCAA conference or association agreements, guidelines, and policies, just a catch-all that would prevent, you know, us saying that we're allowing stuff that would have you and, you know, the university penalized. The intent of my amendment, and I'm not wedded to the percentages, I just, you know, think that sharing with the team, because it's a team sport, and then also contributing to a small portion to the funding of scholarships are very applicable and I think are reasonable. And so I understand your intent. The ball is rolling, and you're trying to get ahead of what's happening or have us at least ready.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck with your effort, but sometime maybe we can have a conversation on a few of these items.
Okay, so with that, we're going to lay this bill on the table. So thank you, members.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, so We're now going to be addressing the Student Consumer Protection Act, and we have a number of members who have provisions on this. And we've been looking forward to working on this or addressing this since last session. The Student Protection Act is a package of bills in response to the Argosy crisis that we dealt with last year and all the students dealt with. We have two testifiers who are former students at Argosy who could not be here with us today but sent their testimony, and you have them in your packages. I'd invite you to read that, and if you haven't already so, we can all hear this package of bills with that frame in mind. Are there any other former Argosy students or faculty in the audience that wish to testify? Okay, come on down. Why don't we just pull up, we have four people? I think it's four. Come down and we will pull up the chairs, four chairs to the table.
Yes, go ahead. Madam Chair, as they get situated, could somebody point me to where the testimony is in my packet?
Okay.
It's with the minutes. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Pryor, it's with the minutes.
Sometimes you get so much paper.
Okay, so. Okay. So we just want to get a little framework on this bill in advance, and so you might not have a chance to read what's in your packet, but if you have, that's great. We have four, I'm assuming students, but they may be faculty, I'm not sure, who are here today that can help with the framework of this as well. So we would like you to state your name and share your comments, and we appreciate you being here today. So thank you. Looks like you're ready to, eager to go. Okay. And then just put the microphone close to your name. Please state your name and begin your comments.
Madam Chair, my name is Nicole Knudsen. You might already have a copy of this in your packet, but I am a former dental hygiene student from Argosy University, and I had transferred in May 2019 to Herzing University to continue my education for the same program. Due to the closure of Argosy University in March 2019, I am now carrying a financial burden. I was unable to apply for closed school discharge because of the way that our credits transferred into Herzing University. May I state that very little had transferred from Argosy to Herzing, although they're both accredited by COTA, like all the other dental hygiene programs in Minnesota. I'm repeating courses and paying again for classes that I had already taken, also at a much higher rate, in excess of $3,960. This is not including fees, books, instruments, and scrubs. This didn't turn out to be much of a transfer pathway for us. It just added to the pile of debt that I'm still carrying from Argosy of $10,500, which is not including the interest that's acquiring while I'm in school. No one has attempted to truly help us in our situation, and it also seems as though Herzing University had taken advantage of a few of the students for their own financial gain, and were being taken advantage of again. I had filed for borrower's defense back in July of 2019, and I'm still waiting for a response. I was supposed to be graduating at the end of this semester, May of 2020. I had gained another year plus a semester and won't be graduating until August of 2021. I'm financially hurting because I had only planned to be in school and then out into my career by this summer, making double the income that I'm currently making now. It's baffling how an institution is allowed to drag students into their mess, wipe their hands of it, and then the students have to pay for their financial mistakes. I am a student investing in my life and my future with the money that I don't have right now. I cannot afford to pay for an education that is not valid. No institution would honor our credits from Argosy University besides Herzing, and they barely honored what we had. My federal financial aid is tied up in loans taken out to pay for Argosy, and they will dry up towards the end of my education at Herzing University, where I will then have to find other financial routes to pay in order to complete my degree. Not only has this been a financial burden, it's also taken a mental toll. We are completely discouraged by the lack of help by the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, by the other colleges and universities in Minnesota that have a dental hygiene program that didn't lend a hand, and by COTA, the accreditor of the dental hygiene program. We were only given one option, and it was fighting for 8 spots at Herzing University between 37 misplaced students. I will say this, I didn't have a choice in the matter. It was either take the spot or apply this December of 2019, a year later after Argosy had gone under receivership, and wait for an acceptance or denial letter for this spring for maybe a chance to start over this fall of 2020 at another school for this program. I didn't choose to pay $100 more per credit. I didn't choose to self-educate myself through a university that changed half their program to online courses. And I'm talking about Herzing. And I didn't choose to spend an extra year in school. However, if I wanted to get my degree in the least amount of time and have a guaranteed spot in a dental hygiene program, I was desperate. I had to enroll at Herzing. It wasn't a matter of choice. It was what I had to do to become a dental hygienist and follow my dreams because Argosy had closed. This situation has been a nightmare that I can't wake up from. It's been a ball and chain that I drag with me daily. I cannot release the weight. It's constantly there, and it's affecting me in all aspects of life. I can't focus on my education because I'm comparing one school to the next. I'm angry when I'm in class repeating the same information that I've already learned and knowing I'm paying double and then some. And I'm stuck working a job that I absolutely hate for another year when I should be out in practice doing what I passionately love. The students are the ones that are paying for this, and it's time that someone does something about it.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Knutson. Our next testifier, please state your name and affiliation for the record, or if you have one, or however you want to do that.
Okay. My name is Sarah Lozano. Sarah Lozano, you probably don't have a copy of mine because I just typed it up about an hour ago. I am also a former Argosy student in the dental hygiene program. I'm here to tell my story and how the Argosy school closure has impacted my life and my journey at Argosy. I began as a student in 2008 when I was on the right track to a better future with a significantly better income. However, I had a family tragedy that seriously impacted my life and my future while I was enrolled in a dental hygiene program. I lost my cousin, whose life was taken, and this affected me in many ways. You see, her murderer was also the father of my 4 young children, whose ages ranged from 5 to 14 at that time. I had no choice and made the decision to drop out and work full-time to support my family since I would now be without any financial assistance from my children into adulthood. I left Argosy but always told myself I would go back to school again to complete my degree when time allotted. Fast forward to April 2017, almost 10 years after I initially began at Argosy University. I found myself back in the admissions office at Argosy to register for classes in the dental hygiene program with a whole new attitude, outlook, and drive to fulfill my dream as a dental hygienist. As a single mother of now 5 children, I was so excited to begin. I performed this slowly with online courses for my prerequisite classes that allowed me to work full-time while being a student. As things progressed in our program, we began our first full-time semester as dental hygiene students. That's when I moved out of my own apartment and back to my parents' house to alleviate some financial stress and primarily focus on school. We all, 37 of us, slowly started to notice in our second semester how things on campus had changed. As we were losing supplies, our admissions office had closed, our cafe had closed. We had no answers. We were misled from some of the staff that we trusted, stemming from the president of our campus on down reiterating to us that everything was going to be fine. And we as students were safe because quota would assure that we wouldn't be allowed to complete our degrees. But that didn't happen. As we all know that our school closed March 9, 2018, almost a year ago. In that time, the painstakingly long wait went from a couple months to 6 months. My fellow students and I were left with no answers or no direction. Things were dragged out while I had to sit around and wait. All the while, I had to wonder if all the valuable time that I lost with my children. My youngest being 5 was time wasted. I gave 2 years of my life to my education. I worked tirelessly trying to manage my time as a mom and as a student. Going to softball tournaments with my schoolwork, late nights up doing schoolwork, and exhaustion from lack of sleep. And for what to be told our doors would be closed, that we must find a way into another program on our own. We were all pushed to the side to be at the mercy of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. With minimal assistance, we had to scramble to see how we would get our transcripts and any other information we could in hopes that another school would possibly purchase our program and allow us to enroll. For an excruciating 6 long months, I had no idea what would come of all the work I had done. We are now coming up on what would have been our final courses of our program, and we would have graduated from Argosy with our associate's degree as dental hygienist, but that's not the case. I'm 42 years old, and I'm now a grandmother. I have a granddaughter who's 2 weeks old and a grandson who's 8 months old. Instead of being able to spend time with my children, ages 25, 23, 19, 16, and 5, I still have a little over a year to complete my degree. That is more time away from moving forward in my life with the people I value most. This has taken a toll on my personal life due to the huge financial burden of my Argosy debt that I am forced to take with me. The additional student, in conjunction with the program I am currently enrolled in, will be roughly about $88,000. And my current school, us Argosy students have no idea who to trust. We question every single thing that happens with our credit transfers, our instructors, the director of our program, and even each other at times. This has affected us as individuals, as students, and I would never want for anyone to have to endure what we suffered from any other institution. As I mentioned, I have children and I have grandchildren. I am here to ask that you see this would never happen to them or any other student again. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Lazaro. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
I'm Cora Schmitz, and I was also a dental hygiene student at Argosy University when the school closed its doors. As you know, we were in our second semester already seeing patients. We were set to graduate spring of 2020, a year from now. And I dedicated my life to school. I went down to work part-time at work, focused all on my attention on school. I have been in contact since the school closed with Century, Herzing, Lake Superior, and they wouldn't at that time accept any like of the core dental hygiene classes. So we would basically have to start over, take more classes, and wait another whole like year to get into a dental hygiene program, and that was not a guarantee to get in right away. I have been paying all my tuition. When I was at Argosy, I paid all my tuition out of my pocket, and I spent over $26,000. I set up a payment plan with the school and overpaid, because I kept a payment plan going, and overpaid by a credit of $1,000 and 62, like about $1,000, that I'll never get back. I was told that I would receive some of that money back, and I filled out all the paperwork, but never saw the money. I also have a $4,500 loan that came with my classes so that I can't get discharged. It's just not fair. I've been working with Century College, and they will not accept any of my dental hygiene classes, only some of my generals. I took a loan last fall for 5 dental hygiene classes that will not transfer anywhere. So I filled out this closed school discharge application. They claim I was ineligible due to credits being transferred to Century College, but I paid all of my transfer classes from Argosy out of my pocket. How can they take those classes away from me when I paid them out of my pocket? I would like my loan discharged because none of them are transferring. Argosy failed to tell us what was going on with the school. They knew before spring semester that this was going to happen, and no news was passed to the students. They lied to us that we'd be able to finish the spring semester and we'd have teach out options available. All they did was lie to their students. Something needs to be done. I feel like I have been robbed of my education, money, and future. We should not be penalized just because the school closed. I just want to pursue my dreams to become a dental hygienist. And I just want to understand like how schools get away with this.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Schmidt. Please state your name and please provide your testimony.
Hi, my name is Myra Fries. I was in my second semester at the dental hygiene program when the school closed. I had made the decision to go back to school back in 2014. I put my life on hold for 2 years to go back to school to be a hygienist when the school closed. I just couldn't wrap my head around being let down by the last one that should let you down is your school. And it took probably 6 months, of just being depressed because you feel like you do everything that you can. I would go to work from 8 until 12 in the morning. I'd go to class from 12 until 4, and then I would go bus tables at Chili's from 4 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night, repetitively, to try to make ends meet. I was suffering. It was hard on my marriage because my husband had to cover the bills while we were trying to better ourselves. And then to have the school close abruptly and not having any of your transfer, I'm sorry, this is really hard for me, because after 8 months I was finally coming to terms with it, and now it just feels like it's coming back to haunt you. And I had to make the decision of, is it worth putting my life on hold again for another 3 years? And it was a hard decision to make. I was taking classes at Century, and Tracy Cooney, the program director, was doing everything that she could. But from CODA's standpoint, her hands were tied. There's only two classes that would transfer from Argosy to Century. And then we would be put back into the pool. So I had to reapply at Century's program for April. And then I would have to start entirely over again in this September. So then instead of graduating in May of 2020, I would be starting over in September of 2020. And then I wouldn't be graduating for another 2 years. And it's just, I feel like we all got swept under the rug, and that just isn't fair to us.
Thank you. It is emotional. It makes me emotional too. So thank you for your testimony.
Can you take over? Well, I guess I want to say on behalf of our committee chair and all the members here today, we so appreciate your coming forward and talking to us and sharing your testimony. And that's, you know, this is the day, and you said, like, it's almost been a year where, you know, we're still trying to figure out your situation and how we can help your situation. But this is the day where we're trying to figure out how to make sure nobody has to be where you are again today. And so you're going to see a series of bills, and they seem like, you know, very, like, why would that make a difference? But I think the idea is when we put them all together, we'll just hold these schools to a higher standard, and that we will put some protections in place for students. And that's what we're after here, is how we can protect students from ever having to be in the position that you're in now. And that no, you know, I wish we could guarantee it, but we will do everything we can so that no student has that March 9th and be in that situation. So these bills that we hear coming forward, it's the ideas that we have now. And but you're, when you come up and talk to us about what happens when it does happen and where you are right now, we'll keep thinking about that too. And you know, I wish I could say that right today we have an idea to help you, and today we do not have an idea for helping you in your situation right now. But we're going back to how can we help other students from this happening to them. So so that's where we are. And but again, I just want to reiterate for everybody that's on the committee right now, we admire your courage for coming forward. We admire your strength for what you're doing in your lives. And we also admire the work that you've chosen to be dental hygienists, because you make us, you know, you're a part of, it's a great career in Minnesota. We need your work and the careers that you've chosen. So we want to hear from you again and know how it's going. And now we're going to hear the bills, and we have, we also, if Representative Quam, would you like to make a comment at this point too?
Madam Chair, I was just, it was good to hear. Well, it was difficult to hear, but it's nice to hear the details, the human experiences that were involved. I think, weren't there like vet tech and some other major areas, and it'd be maybe good for the committee if we can get some more details. Now, almost a year's gone by, what has happened and what hasn't happened as we try to address this? But thank you. That's how we find out. It's from your experiences in your testimony. And I just would hope that maybe from the other mm-hmm. majors that were offered in that program to sort of understand what worked and what didn't. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep. Yes. Please testify.
A lot hasn't happened, and a lot of our really speak in this. A lot hasn't happened, and that's like the major issue. Like, we weren't protected, nothing happened for us, and people said that they tried, but honestly, we're not seeing it, and we all have different stories. Like, for us too, like, we ended up at Herzing University. Did you guys end up starting yet?
No.
These girls aren't even in school, and there was maybe 10 that ended up at Herzing. There's still 27 misplaced students from our cohort mm-hmm. that don't have a home, or they chose to do dental assisting, something that they didn't exactly want to do, or another degree of some sort of something like that's not what they went to school for. So a lot hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
And these students do need to be protected. Like, I don't know what to suggest here, but like, we're hurting from this, and it's been a year later. Like, it's been a mental toll. Like, it is hard to like realize for us, we were supposed to graduate in a couple of months from now. And now we're all set back, and there's money involved, and it's messy, and nobody is there to even support us, to get us through this, like, in all aspects. So that's just what I wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Knutson. Appreciate your comments on this, and thank you, Representative Quam, for reminding us that there even are more students beyond the ones we see today, the ones that we know that did get a program where we're able to graduate, but there are other specialty students that were not being reached. So thank you, testifiers, for being with us today, and we'll talk about, I think we'll now turn and talk about the specific bills that we're gonna hear today to prevent this from happening in, from the future. And, oh, I'm sorry. Representative Rumbeck, you wanted to make another comment
too? Thank you, Madam
Chair. If it's all right, testifiers, you want to stay for another couple minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all the students for being here today. Several of you mentioned the Office of Higher Ed, and I'm not even sure, you know, what their role is in this, but it would be, I don't know if anybody is here from that office that could shed a little more light on
right.
the interaction.
Representative Rumbeck, yes,
okay.
The Office of Higher Ed will be testifying on the bills that are coming forward.
I see, okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, thank you. Thank you, students, thank you, testifiers.
Thank you.
We greatly appreciate you being here today. First, I'd like to invite Representative Claiborne and Betsy Talbot of the Office of Higher Ed to the testifier table to present House File 3959. And while they are on the way to the table, I'd like the committee to know the plan. Each of you will present your bills. We will lay them over and then amend them into an act with a DE at the end. So that is the plan right now. Mm-hmm. And we only have until 4 o'clock. And we'll keep that in mind. And then do you, Representative Chair Bernardi, would you like to move House File 3595 be laid over?
Yes, I would like to do that.
Thank you, Chair Pinard. Representative Claiborne, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As we have just painfully heard the stories of nearly 1,000 Argosy students who were devastated when the university closed its door on March 8th, halfway through its spring semester, we realized that the fix that we put into place last year was not enough. As the governor stated, whether it was their first semester or last, the Argosy students had their plans for their futures sidetracked in a way they never could have imagined. Today we are here with additional legislation to help prevent this situation from ever happening again. Madam Chair, I have also as a co-author on Bill 4037, Representative Edelson had to be in another committee at this time. So first, we will address House File 3959, and I would ask that Betsy Talbot from the Office of Higher Education address the contents of the bill itself. Thank you.
So we are addressing House File 3595 at this point?
3959 is the number I have.
59. All right. Okay. 3959. And Ms. Talbot, please proceed.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. So as we work through the kind of shortfalls or legislative gaps for consumer protections, one of the issues that we identified for this particular bill was enabling a registration, revocation, or suspension related to the use of fraudulent.
Ms. Talbot, I'm sorry to interrupt, because could you just state your name officially for the record?
Sure, no worries.
Thank you.
So I'm Betsy Talbot. I'm the manager of institutional registration and licensing for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education.
Thank you, Ms. Talbot.
So as I was saying, we were identifying some legislative gaps for consumer protections. And one of the legislative gaps we identified is being consistent with other licensing entities for prohibitions against certain business practices. And those include the use of fraudulent, coercive, or dishonest practices, demonstrated incompetence, untrustworthiness, or financial irresponsibility, or has already been administratively or judicially determined to have committed fraud or a material violation of law in violating state or local or federal funds. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to incorporate this into the language, specifically into lines 2.24 mm-hmm. through 2.28 is including that language specifically into the statute. We do also add some amendments through lines 1.7 to 1.1. Those are just clarifying language to make sure we break out the reasons of revocations or denials, so it's more clear to the reader and when we cite revocations or denials, what the grounds are.
Thank you, Ms. Talbot. Representative Claiborne, any additional comments on House File 3959?
Well, Madam Chair, today we heard stories about students who felt that they had been coerced and fraudulently treated with the untrustworthiness of their advisors at their school. And I believe that this legislation, House File 3959, will go a long way to support the students and to make sure that this practice does not go forward. With that, I renew the motion to have it laid over. Thank you.
And actually, Chair Bernardi, do you renew the motion to lay over?
Yes,
it's House, it's House File 3959,
yes,
and we have clarified. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Bernardi. All in favor?
No, we don't have to do that.
No, we'll do that later. Sorry. We're sorting it out. All right. And then Representative Claiborne, you will be presenting Representative Edelson's bill.
Yes, Madam
Chair. Were you
Chair.
A co-author, and it's House File 4037?
4037. Yes, I am a co-author on the bill.
Thank you. And would you like to move House File 4037 be laid over?
I do. Thank you.
All right. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This, when a student has been accepted to a private college, there was previously a requirement that they give notice of cancellation of the program. And this bill addresses the issue of what a student is required to do when they are giving notice of cancellation. And I would ask that Ms. Talbot again go into the details of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Talbot. If you can again identify yourself.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Specifically, we're asking for kind of a technical.
Just go ahead and say Ms. Talbot.
Ms. Talbot, technical changes to 1.7. And where we strike written. We are, you know, it's 2020. We want to enable students to be able to give notice of their cancellation of their enrollment by means that are modern, and that may not always be in writing. And so we want students to be able to provide notice by leaving voicemail messages, by sending email messages, mm-hmm. in a face-to-face meeting that can be documented by the school as an acceptable form of official withdrawal. To enable students to communicate more effectively with their schools.
Thank you. And with that, Madam Chair, we would entertain any questions if you would have.
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so just this general section of law, does that apply then also to other higher ed institutions, including the state-run ones, MNSCU, for example? That you know, there has to be just a notice of cancellation provided, doesn't have to be written?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, Representative, I'm not sure that I fully understand the question that you're asking.
House File 4037, is that what we're on?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just looking at the legislation, amended or unamended. Does this, it's only applying to private career schools. Does it also apply to our MNSCU institutions?
Madam Chair.
Because, I mean, I...
Representative Claiborne.
On line 16.1, it says when a student has been accepted by a private career school and gives notice of cancellation. It only refers to private career school.
Ms. Talbot?
Oh, sure. So the amendment only applies to specifically schools under the Private Career School Act, which are non-public, non-degree-granting institutions. So think horseshoeing or a coding boot camp, for example. Those are the programs that are covered specifically under the Act. Our office does not have authority over the public institutions other than for purposes of SARA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's
fine. Thank you, Representative.
I have a bit more to learn, maybe.
Perhaps later follow-up. Representative Quam, you also have a question?
Yes. It appears to me as, you know, you're deleting the word written. There has been some, you know, discussion of different things that would count as notice. I would feel more comfortable if you're going to delete written that you enumerate such as in a short list, you know, just to give some parameters, because I'm not sure in the future what social media type thing might be considered, you know, as notice, but not be visible to, you know, the administration. Just a formality.
Madam Chair.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I appreciate your concern. I agree with you that communication going forward is a living thing, and it changes as times change. But at this moment, we're not enumerating how people may communicate. We are saying that it's just not required to be in writing. And if you would remember back earlier when we heard testimony from students in prior sessions of this committee, they spoke about the fact that they were talking to their advisors at that time. And under this provision, that would have been sufficient. Instead, the doors closed, and they were not yet able to submit written documentation. So,
Representative Quam, follow-up?
Yeah, just a follow-up. Over the years, I've noticed judicial interpretation of statute. It's sort of an open time bomb to have, you know, somebody decide this way or that way. Mm-hmm. Some guidance, I think, would be advisable, and that's just for future reference if this does move forward.
Thank you very much. No, thank you very much. I will consider that on possible future legislation. Thank you.
All right. So, Representative Claiborne, would you like to renew your motion to lay over House File 4037?
Yes, Madam Chair. I ask that House File 4037 be laid over for a future inclusion. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Next, Representative Lucero will present House File 4023, and Representative Nornes will be up after that.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move HF 4023.
Right. Thank you, Representative Sarah. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and members. HF 4023 is related to current statute designates nothing in relevant current law shall be interpreted as permitting the office to determine the truth or falsity of religious beliefs. Current law erroneously extends the range of statutes covered to include private charter schools. HF 4023 would limit the range of statutes to just the sections of law covering degree-granted schools, and I look for your support.
Thank you. And any other testifiers on House File 4023? Or questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative Lucero. And would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I would renew my motion that HF 4023 be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Lucero.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Nornes.
I would like to move House File 4029.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. House File 4029. And would you please proceed with your testimony?
I'll be brief. I might need some help.
No worries, I'll try.
This 4029, House File 4029, deals with regulation of religious post-secondary schools. Current law provides a religious exemption from the Office of Higher Education from the registration and lease licensing requirements for degree granting in private career schools. If a school offers a particular degree program that is non-religious, the school is subject to the Office of Higher Education regulation and must be licensed or registered by the Office of Higher Education. The bill allows a school that offers both religious and non-religious programs to receive a religious exemption for its religious programs, but requires non-religious programs to register with the Office of Higher Education or be licensed by the Office of Higher Education. I hope you understand that.
All right.
Do you?
I do.
Good.
Right.
So it's needed, and I will ask no questions. No. I think that it's pretty clear what this provision is providing, mm-hmm. hopefully.
And any other, anyone from the audience, public, would also like to testify on House File 4023? And member questions? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion to lay over for possible inclusion?
I renew House File 4029. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nornes.
Okay, so next, Vice Chair Pryor will present her bill, and I'll let her. She went around the other way.
Okay, gotcha.
So we'll be hearing House File 4038, and then Representative Vang, you're up on deck just to let you know. So would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. I would like to move House File 4038. To be laid over.
Okay, and so Vice Chair Pryor moves House File 4038 to be laid over. Please proceed with your bill. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 4038, you know, as some of the work that we can do to prevent what's happened in the past with a school like Argosy, we want to make sure that we're shoring up our legislation and shoring up our protections. And what this bill does is that we make sure that schools are not just a front for something else by just having like a post office box in place, but that they actually have to have a physical location here in Minnesota. So that's what this bill, it does add that language, which is physically located in Minnesota. And also the word new, the new programs that are coming in. So I would also like to have my testifier, Ms. Talbert, speak to this issue too and why it's important for part of our package of student protection.
Ms. Talbert.
Thank you. The Minnesota Office of Higher Education has seen a growing trend of online distance education providers who would like to establish in Minnesota. And they establish via a post office box or an office sharing situation where they may rent for an hour. a month to claim that they're here, but these programs are unaccredited. And they do pose a significant risk for consumer protections for students that may enroll. And this is to ensure that we can provide the proper oversight of these institutions who are seeking accreditation. The degree granting statute really relies and piggybacks on federal accreditation. And these schools do not have that yet. And we need the ability to shore our borders, essentially, to ensure that we can do that proper oversight of those institutions while they're getting accreditation and while they're enrolling students. And because we have to assume that role. We would like, if an institution would like to come from out of state and who does not have accreditation, to have accreditation first and have that home state be responsible for that process as opposed to ourselves.
Okay. Any further comments, Representative Pryor?
Not for me.
Okay, would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to renew my motion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So Representative Pryor moves her motion for House File 4038 to be laid over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Vang.
Hello, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And welcome to the testifiers table. Would you like to move your motion?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 4036 to be in front of the committee. I also have another House File 2054 that will come right afterwards.
Okay, so we're just going to work on 4036 right now. And so Representative Vang makes the motion for House File 4036 to be laid over. Thank you, Representative Vang. Please proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. So House File 4036 is a bill that prohibits degree granting and private career schools from requiring students to agree to mandatory pre-dispute arbitration clauses. The language makes registration and licensure contingent on a school not requiring such clauses. And so this is an important part of the consumer protection. That will give students who have been victims of an institution in poor financial health a tool to pursue their claims in court. And I can leave it to my testifier, Betsy, who can answer entertaining questions too.
Ms. Talbot.
I don't have anything really new to add other because she did such a great job, but arbitration clauses do limit students and their ability to coordinate and together in class action suits, which is really the only way where they're financially viable to pursue claims against an institution. And we want to ensure that schools are not limiting consumer protections for their students.
Thank you. Representative Vang, would you like to remove your motion?
Yes, I'd like to renew my motion for House File 4036 to be laid over.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Okay, so to tie this all together, we have House File 2054. Would you like to move that amendment?
Oh,
okay. Okay, Representative Vang, would you like to move your House File 2054 to be referred to the General Register?
2054?
Yes.
Yes, so moved.
Okay, so there is a DE1 amendment, and I will move the DE1 amendment to be adopted to put the bill into the form the committee would like. This is putting all the bills together in one to send to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries and the amendment is adopted. So now, committee members, we have House File 2054, the Student Consumer Protection Act, in front of us. I'm assuming there's no further discussion, but I'm just going to make sure that's okay. And so, committee members, we have House File 2054, the Student Consumer Protection Act, in front of us. I will move that 2054 be referred to the General Register. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 2054? Is there any further discussion by members? Okay, here no further discussion. I renew my motion to refer House File 2054 to the General Register. All those in favor?
aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.